When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Tonight and NXT Heatwave here tomorrow. So just an incredible run. We'll have done over 45,000 tickets through the weekend. We had a record house here of 19,858, which was a highest arena gate for WWE in Canada in history. So very good there. And it looks like initial view will be record viewers for Money in the Bank across platforms. I can't talk about legal stuff at the moment.
We have one more last question.
Everybody, you say last question. So far, I've been standing in the back waiting for everybody to wrap up. I feel like I'm on the main event of one of those 7-hour pay-per-views where you're just like, please get the thing over with.
Thanks.
And don't read into that, Jesus. I meant one of ours. I was in main events of stuff that went 6-7 hours, dreading having to go out there to a silence, right? Just calm down.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand on YouTube, on Twitter X, on Facebook, from Buffalo, New York, recently returned from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, where today is July the 7th, 2024. And today on the program, we will discuss talent analytics. We'll take an arbitrary look, a mathematical look at the most important question, perhaps, in all of media: who's a draw? We'll take a look at the first half of 2024. That includes the months of January, February, March, April, and May and June, and look at TV ratings for WWE and AEW. Look at live events via estimated tickets distributed for WWE and AEW, and attendance for the leading promotions in Japan via their own announced attendance numbers. As well as we will discuss my trip last night and throughout the day yesterday to Toronto for Money in the Bank, as WWE held its most recent premium live event in Toronto at Scotiabank Center. But first, I want to address some things. I have read a lot of your messages since last night and everything that has transpired. And I just want to give a few brief comments, as I had a long drive. It's a 2-hour drive from Toronto back home for me to Buffalo. I had a lot of time to reflect on some things that happened, some choices that were made, and quite frankly, some mistakes that were made on my part. As I spent the day in Toronto, attended Money in the Bank, and I went through the entire day thinking about what I was going to do later in the day when it came time to make a certain decision. And after thinking about it and having read many of the replies and the feedback that I've gotten, including some direct messages that I've gotten from some people giving me some feedback, I really want to apologize for deciding to get coffee and not visit a Tim Hortons while I was in Canada. That's a mistake on my part. It's accountability that I really need to take for spending the entire day in Canada. And you know, we take for granted here in Buffalo, even though we do have a number of Tim Hortons throughout Western New York. It's a different experience, I understand, when you go to Canada and you do patron a Tim Hortons, and I'm a patron of not only a number of wrestling media, but also of coffee, and I just can't really excuse and explain away my lack of support for Tim Hortons while I was in Canada. So I hope that you understand that I want to reflect on this choice that I made and become a better person going forward. In any event, I did attend Money in the Bank and the press conference. We were seated up here in the press box. Had a nice view. I know some people didn't like this view, but it was I found it fine. It was ideal for watching hockey. If you were watching a Toronto Maple Leafs game, you had a clear view of the banners of one Doug Gilmore, Matt Sundin. No Ty Domi banner up here, though. I guess he got in all those fights for nothing. And the crowd was really hot. What was the last WWE event I was at? I guess WrestleMania. We were kind of in an indoor press box where we were a bit removed in terms of the audio that we could hear with our natural ears at Lincoln Field, Lincoln Financial Field. Crowd was super hot. I wasn't in attendance for any of the other, I wasn't in France or Glasgow or anything, obviously. This crowd was really loud. This is a photo during the LA Knight entrance as the men's Money in the Bank match was getting started here. Pretty packed crowd. I know some pointed out to me that there were some empty seats here, hard cam side, but I mean, we've got numbers here from WrestleTix. The latest, I believe this is a final count. I just updated the slide just before we went to air here. 18,555 is what the estimate is for WrestleTix based on the photos, based on the ticket map. The announced attendance on the broadcast, I've been told, was 19,858. So a difference of a little over 1,000 there between the WrestleTix estimate and the number that WWE announced, probably Michael Cole announced on the broadcast, WrestleTix detailing here that perhaps suites makes up the difference. I was visited by someone from WWE who we were discussing whether suites could make up the difference here. I was told that you know that these numbers, of course, you know, don't include suites here from WrestleTix. That's what's on the ticket map, is just seats and no suites. Just about every time, I think, if not every time, that's what WrestleTix is estimating, the fixed seating that doesn't include suites, because I think suites are a different arrangement in terms of getting access to those. So it could be the difference here. We could be looking at a legit number, 19,858. If you counted up tickets distributed, plus people in the suites. I don't know how you would actually get an account of the people in the suites. That might change by venue as well. I don't know if there's, because I think some people just have like year round access to suites. I don't know if that's the case in this venue, but in some venues that is the case. In any case, 19,000, that's close to believable here. And certainly the WrestleTix estimate is close to that, 18,555. The night before, WrestleTix estimates SmackDown, same building in Toronto, 16,980. They announced 16,932. WrestleTix actually going higher than the announced attendance. So there you go. I suppose maybe that doesn't include suites. Who knows? And in any case, of course, WrestleTix is an estimate on top of that. NXT Heatwave happening tonight, the NXT premium live event. And WrestleTix, as of its last estimate, I think this is yesterday evening, 9,552 is the tickets distributed. So half, we got about half of the capacity as of the latest count here for NXT. Not bad for NXT, I would say, though, compared to what some of the recent numbers have been, you know, in the mid single digit thousands. I was told that, you know, on the secondary market, there were tickets for as much as $1,000 for multiple hundreds of dollars. So no surprise then that Paul Levesque said that this was the highest arena gate in Canadian history for WWE. I guess that would rule out these stadiums, which would include the big event. Let's not forget the big event in the 80s with Paul Orndorff and Hulk Hogan. But of course, for WrestleMania 6 and WrestleMania 18? Yes, 18 in Toronto in the Sky Dome. So I would think that to take a stab at it, I would guess this went into the 2 millions in terms of the gate. So we also had big news here. John Cena coming out and saying that he is retiring from sports entertainment, professional wrestling, whatever you want to call it. John Cena is, he made it sound like in the promo that he was going to have a match at Royal Rumble, Elimination Chamber, and WrestleMania, and then be done after that. But he clarified in the press conference that this is actually a January to December retirement tour, I want to call it. Does that mean how many matches is he going to have? Is it going to be only televised matches? Will be house shows a part of this? That he took many questions and insisted on taking many questions. But we didn't get a clearer idea in terms of how many matches and how many live events he will be wrestling on. But I'm sure this is going to translate into strong business in one form or another as the John Cena retirement tour. Imagine the secondary market ticket prices for John Cena's retirement tour. And yes, we did have the decibel meter made another appearance here. I think it was on the broadcast. It was certainly on the big screen on the scoreboard here as the pop, the response for John Cena was being measured by the W broadcast team. And we were sure to check this here at WrestleNomics. The team busted out and downloaded on the spot this decibel meter app and allowed access to the microphone on the smartphone that belongs to the WrestleNomics audio team. And we measured the decibel, the decibels that were being heard as we sat up there in the press box. We were way up there above everybody here. And we got a decibel number that was similar to, I believe, what we were seeing on the screen here, 95 decibels. So I was also assured that this is a legit number by WWE. So, and then we had immediately after this was out, well, not immediately, but, you know, soon after this was out, Reuters with the coverage here that John Cena headline, John Cena announces retirement from in-ring competition in 2025. WWE says, I did not receive this press release, but apparently Reuters got a comment and put out a two-sentence story. July 6th, Reuters, U.S. wrestling superstar, use the word wrestling, and actor. No mention of his work as a Honda voiceover guy, right? Is it Honda or Toyota? Who cares? Actor John Cena announced retirement from in-ring competition in 2025. World Wrestling Entertainment, that's WWE, said in a post on social media platform X on Saturday. Well, maybe it's just they're referencing the social media post, and maybe it's not a press release. Anyway, it says, quote, John Cena announces retirement from in-ring competition, stating that WrestleMania 41 in Las Vegas will be his last, WWE said. So this is a big enough story for Reuters to cover, be that as it may. So again, he said that Royal Rumble will be his last. Elimination Chamber will be his last. Elimination Chamber, WrestleMania will be his last WrestleMania. This is going through January to December, which is a big takeaway that I had from the press conference. He did note, well, what's most important to John Cena? He loves site fees. He made clear at last year's Money in the Bank that he loves site fees when he was in London, when he was essentially campaigning for you to go to your member of parliament. If you're a UK citizen, go to your member of parliament and tell them that you want WrestleMania in London. We've seen in some of the documents that we've obtained through various sources to put, you know, government, not just records requests, but really things that are just on government websites, including those in Texas, that, you know, London has been listed among the cities that were considered for what it's worth in the past, years past now. But anyway, John Cena coming out at last year's Money in the Bank and telling you that, you know, basically to push for an organic campaign that you should bring WrestleMania to London. Well, anyway, that's still to be seen if WrestleMania will someday be in London or anywhere outside of the US or Canada. But another thing that I bet John Cena loves is he loves WWE's media deals. I bet he loves these big TV deals. And what could be more important to the company that he loves than a deal with Netflix that is starting in January? He did mention Netflix specifically. He wants to be a part of the WWE era as it debuts on Netflix this January. And I'm sure, so I would speculate that what you're going to see is John Cena mostly on Raw, or at least, you know, prominently on Raw, maybe in the early days of WWE on Netflix, as WWE will, I'm sure, have a big push and push for at least the first episode of Raw on Netflix to be a really big deal. And there's all sorts of special stuff that you need to tune in for this first episode on Netflix so that we can ingrain in you this learned behavior to no longer watch Raw on the USA Network, but to redirect that behavior onto your streaming platform that's in 60 million plus homes probably in the United States, and go and watch Raw live on Netflix. And I bet that we're going to see lots of John Cena, at least in that first episode, I bet, and probably after that as well, as it sounds like he's going to be involved throughout the early part of the year based on him saying Royal Rumble, which is February 1st, Elimination Chamber, which is also before WrestleMania, and then WrestleMania, which will be mid-April. So Q1 into Q2, I bet you're going to see lots of John Cena all over Netflix, which I'm sure Netflix and that partnership will love having John Cena there, one of the biggest stars in wrestling history, one of the bigger stars in entertainment. God, they'll be able to promote John Cena and have John Cena, a name that the executives recognize. Man, it'll be great. And it'll help viewership, I'm sure. Curious to know, other things that he took a lot of questions, including one from John Pollock about Vince McMahon, which he was not very interested in responding to, but, would be interested to know too, you know, how much is this going to, take away from his time that he's dedicating to his movie career, whatever else he's doing with his career. Of course, we'll be curious to know what he's getting paid here by WWE to do this, as it seems like a needed investment to service your what probably is the biggest, going to be the biggest partnership going forward for WWE, right? Will it be no longer ABC Universal? I guess it depends on what the renewal is like for Peacock. If there is a renewal with Peacock, I'm sure you're going to have Netflix in the game for those PLE rights that are coming up for expiration in March of 2026. So lots of reasons why it's a great idea for John Cena to be doing something of such importance here. Interesting too, one of my takeaways from the press conference and John Cena's comments there was that I should check on the actual words that he's saying here. So I don't want to misquote him, but he made it sound like this was an idea that a retirement tour was an idea that was presented to him. Now I know he's talked about retirement before. This did not come out of nowhere. He's been alluding to his time as a wrestler being limited. He did make it sound though, like it was an idea that was presented to him. So, curious if this was an idea that was like, well, what's one of the biggest things that we could do as a campaign to drive viewership and interest in Netflix early in this partnership? John Cena's final matches. These are the last times that you're going to be able to see John Cena. So, in other news surrounding Money in the Bank, we had The Boys. What is The Boys? We had some sponsorships here. I had my eyes peeled for sponsorships. And, of course, we had Prime. We had a lot of Prime, in fact. I hope there wasn't any confusion in the marketplace that was caused here. These were different goods and services, so hopefully everything is still fine with the USPTO office. Prime Energy Drink, that logo, which was not present in Saudi Arabia on the canvas, was present here in Toronto for Money in the Bank. Right on the canvas, you had the Prime... you know, you had the stock of Prime Energy Drinks ringside by the announce table as usual. But you also had, not the only Prime that was present here as a sponsor, Amazon Prime seems to be, I don't know what it was like in the broadcast, but seemed to be the official sponsor of the Money in the Bank ladder matches, promoting the series The Boys on Amazon Prime Video, which I understand is a super, if superheroes were evil politicians, basically, is the series. This is the gimmick of that series. So Amazon Prime Video and Logan Paul's Prime Energy Drink sponsors. Those are the only sponsors prominently that I saw. I can't think of any others. This was on the strip around the arena. It was on the strip around the scoreboard at the arena. I did notice in my lift ride to the arena that there was Of course, there was a Money in the Bank store that was, I'm told that was at the Rec Center. I did not visit it, but it was at the Rec Center, which is a location that actually Smash Wrestling has run some shows at. But here, what looks to be the corner of Bremner and York, which is right at the foot of the arena, there was this banner here telling you that there is a Money in the Bank store here in Toronto. So you'd think that you don't just put that up on a street pole, on a street sign pole, without the permission of the city. Maybe there's some cooperation from the local government here to some extent. I would be surprised if there was a hefty site fee in a market as big as Toronto, though. But who knows? In terms of other things that we learned at the what is now not just the Money in the Bank press conference, but the Money in the Bank post show, as our experience sitting in the seats at the press conference was there were, I guess if you watched it, you know that there were breaks throughout, interspersed throughout the different guests who were at the press conferences. I didn't see it, but I assume they kept going back to the desk with Wade Barrett, and I understand Wade Barrett and Drew McIntyre and Adam Pearce did some sort of angle in the midst of that. Of course, John Cena was there, as we discussed already. Paul Levesque said that the attendance for the weekend was over 45,000. If we jump back, can we get to a total of 45,000? Should we do live on the air math at the risk of boring people by reading numbers here? If we add, let's just take the WrestleTix numbers, and before we even need to think about suites, 18,555 for Money in the Bank, plus 16,980 for SmackDown, plus what right now is the count for Heatwave, 9,582. We do get to 45,117. We get to over 45,000 right there, right with WrestleTix estimates. So we can provide solid support to Paul Levesque's claim here on the press conference about the attendance. He said the Money in the Bank was the highest arena gate in Canada history, as we mentioned earlier. So that probably would put it just under the WrestleMania gates, presumably. He said that this was a new record for viewers for Money in the Bank, which is something that used to get said all the time. This was the highest viewership ever for the event of this name. Hadn't heard that in a while. Maybe we did hear that for WrestleMania. That might be mentioned in the press release, but I don't think we heard that for like Clash of the Castle. But that used to be something that would get mentioned all the time. But this, he did say that this was the highest viewership for Money in the Bank. As Peacock Peacock subscribers are now, I think, around 30 million in the U.S., as Peacock is still steadily growing and has not plateaued yet with all of their NFL games and things that they have to promote. They have the Olympics coming up, so I suppose that helps as well. That we'll probably see whenever Comcast, not sure, I think they run in the same fiscal year as WWE does, TKO, I should say now. So I think they'll be coming up. Probably, let's see, because we're at the end of Q2 now, so maybe late July or early August we'll get another round of media companies earnings reports and subscriber updates, although Netflix is swearing that off soon. But we'll see if they're even higher than 30 million at this point. Remember, the what's the high mark here for cable TV at this point is roughly, I think we're well under 80 million for the most highly covered cable networks at this point. So we'll move on to Q1, half year in review.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we'll start by reflecting, even more reflection today. Reflecting now on numbers, on percentages, on numbers that here have been formatted into thousands and millions. We'll talk about TV ratings first, as TV ratings are among the most important metrics in TV, even though Nielsen is just a sample, even though cable is in decline. PW Torch, I'll go on a tangent here. PW Torch had a report this past Friday about coverage ratings. Oh, I'm going to explain some minutiae here. The PG-49 ratings that we're looking at here, if you're watching a video, the PH-49 ratings that you're familiar with if you regularly read TV ratings reports. These ratings are what's called national ratings, as opposed to coverage ratings. These are national ratings. These are not coverage ratings. What's a national rating? A national rating is, this is the percentage of people in the United States, in the case of a PH-49, this is the percentage of people in the United States between the ages of 18 and 49 who live in a home with a television. So let's say SmackDown. SmackDown did a 0.65 for the first half of the year this year. That means 0.65% of all people in the United States who live in homes with televisions, which is like 95% of them, 0.65% of all 18 to 49-year-olds in TV homes were watching SmackDown on average. So what a coverage rating is this is the percentage of people in this age group who get access to the network, which should adjust for the much talked about cord cutting decline in TV. So PW Torch had a report about Dynamite ratings showing that, well, if you look at the coverage rating, the PG-49 coverage rating, which again should adjust for cord cutting and the lack of access, the loss in access over time to the network, in this case, TBS. If you look at that, and PW Torch, Wade Keller was looking at two data points in this year in recent times versus two data points from the prior year in a similar period, and showing that the number was lower in this year versus last year. I've been told by people at AEW that actually, if you look over the broader course of time, the decline is much more mild. Okay. I'm working on getting data from a disinterested source to look at that over the broad course of time, so we can get a clearer picture of that. And I hope to do a follow-up on that if I get that data. So we'll try to investigate this further. In any case, here's the ratings in terms of just, this is a raw, not adjusted for cord cutting analysis here, right? And as we know, if you've been watching TV ratings, if you've been looking at TV ratings, you know that WWE is up, AEW is down. That's the main takeaway here. Before we get into reciting numbers and boring you, that's the takeaway here. AEW is down and WWE is up. Which W show is up the most? NXT. Which AEW show is down the most? It's a complicated story with Collision. It's kind of an unfair comparison. That's not to say that this show is actually doing great compared to, actually doing better compared to last year. It's not Collision. Collision is down 55% in the demo, 40% in total viewership. However, that is comparing 20 episodes in this year versus 2 episodes in last year. Of course, that's the big debut episode, which is going to be the highest viewership perhaps in all of the history of Collision. It certainly is now. And the second episode is probably close to the second most highly viewed Collision episode that there is as well. So a skewed comparison here. Okay, let's put that aside. And let's look at Dynamite, which is really the flagship of AEW. 26 episodes in all three of the last 3 years. And we've got the demo down 13%, total viewership down 14%. So that's where they are. It's the second consecutive year where there's been decline. And in terms of the demo, this is the second consecutive year where there's been double-digit percentages of decline. When I look at LRG Research, which is a guy who goes through the SEC filings of all these public companies, media companies, and telecom companies that provide cable and provide virtual MVPD, including YouTube TV and Hulu TV and Sling. LRG Research shows that cable subscribers year over year, the latest we've got, I think, is Q4, and that's down 9%. And that should broadly affect cable in general, right? Because we're talking about cable providers, and that's going to downstream affect basically all cable companies. Okay, so that's -9%. That's less negative than most of the deltas that we have on this screen right now for Rampage. Now, if we can get into coverage ratings that perhaps look at how these networks like TBS and TNT are covering the country by month, we might get a tighter, you know, a more accurate analysis, I suppose. In any case, we're seeing still a lot of sports viewership is up. Now, Dynamite is still highly ranked on its day. Collision and Rampage are doing okay, especially if we're just isolating to their time slot. Diamond Collision and PT49 are still among the most watched programs on cable in their time slot, in prime time, let's say. So they're doing okay. And Dynamite is still a really strong flagship show. Are we in the exclusive window yet? Are we out of the exclusive window for AEW? Are they still bound to talk to David Zaslav and only David Zaslav? Don't know. My guess would be July 1st, and we're past July 1st. And maybe AEW, maybe, is now free to talk to the likes of Amazon Prime. Andy Jassy, I'm sure he's not handling those meetings directly. I forget who the sports rights person is for Prime Video. Are they free to talk to Eric Shanks at Fox Sports? I could see FS1 being a reasonable potential home for some AEW content. I could see Amazon Prime Video being a potential home for some AEW content or some AEW pay-per-view rights or some AEW library rights. We'll see. Does NBA play into that? I still don't know. Are the NBA rights going to get done anytime soon? I don't know. Are the NBA rights going to be a prolonged process that is agitated by a dispute involving Warner Brothers Discovery and then some litigation over whether or not they have the right to bid for whatever, to match a bid that NBC or Amazon is making? Who knows? And will that complicate and prolong, has already prolonged the process for AEW, which is a lower priority than the NBA? Who knows? But we'll continue to monitor. In the case of WWE, despite all that terrible cord cutting that's adversely affecting and causing headwinds to AEW, Tony Khan is not focused on his competitors. It's interesting, isn't it? How whoever's business is colder is not focused on their competitor. As we know that WWE, when AEW was on the upswing, and WWE, their consumer business, their fan interest was more stagnant. It was WWE that had blinders on, as Nick Khan would say, and was only focused on themselves. They're not focused on a competitor. They're not going to be distracted by a competitor. Oh, no. And now it's Tony Khan, who I believe said in his interview with Wrestling Observer with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, that he's not going to let what a competitor is doing bother him in terms of WWE's ratings being up. Despite cord cutting, which Tony Khan points to as a way to explain away the declines in ratings for AEW. Raw, SmackDown, NXT, in the demo are now up in two consecutive years of January to June comparisons here. Of course, as I said, NXT is up, whether you like it or not. Whether you enjoy the backstage high school theater of NXT, viewers enjoy it, not just viewers in terms of total viewership. And I'm focusing on the demo. If you look at total viewership, the story is more complicated. And we do have some flatness over the last 2 years. We do have a negative comparison, down 5%. Raw is in January to June versus last year. But if you look in the demo, everything is up. Everything is up at least a little bit. Raw is up only 3%. Only 3% in January, June, but still up despite the lack of engagement, the loss of engagement in cable TV generally. And SmackDown is up 8%. In the demo, flat in terms of total viewership compared to last year in the same period. Okay. By the end of the year, all of these shows are going to be on different networks. NXT will be on CW come this fall by October. SmackDown will be on the USA Network, no longer on Fox. Raw will be in its extended period by October with the USA Network, and then it'll be moving to Netflix. And then I don't know if we'll ever see Raw ratings again. Hopefully Nielsen gets on top of that. We'll see. So that's ratings, right? Do we have any other takeaways besides this? I mean, it's kind of a moot point at this point for WWE. They've got their TV deals in place for 5 years at least, right? Okay. There's the averages. I won't read them to you in audio. You can look at them for yourself if you're watching a video. That's total viewership. In the demo, we did see some intersecting in terms of week-by-week ratings for NXT and Dynamite. The averages, there's still some significant margin here in the averages in Q2. Dynamite averaged a 0.24 demo rating, to NXT's 0.20. There was one week, I believe in only one week, where NXT did beat in the same week, did have a higher demo rating than Dynamite a few weeks ago, be that as it may. We are seeing, Collision settle out here. It's been settled at about the same level for three quarters here. Collision with a 0.13, up from its 0.12 sequentially in the prior quarter, up from about the same as the 0.13 that it did in Q4. So that's where it's settling. It's settling in the low teens. Low teens. I think it's an Every Time I Die album. Anyway, Rampage has settled too. And it's been settled in the low teens. Now at a 0.10, in fact, which is probably its lowest quarterly average that it's had so far. In any case, there's the quarterly averages. All right, that's enough TV ratings. I'm not going to go into ridiculous minutia of demos. Sorry. You can, subscribers, if you're a data subscriber, you have access to the spreadsheet if you would like to go into minutia of demos and look at what demographic information we do have there. estimated tickets distributed. We will now rely on WrestleTix and look at WWE and AEW. Again, this focuses only on January to June because seasonality is real. The seasons do come and go. It gets cold, it gets warm, indoor entertainment, WrestleMania seasonality effect perhaps. Okay. And what we have here, high-level takeaways before I start rattling off numbers. High-level takeaways, similar to TV ratings. Is it everything? It's almost everything. Almost everything for WWE is up. Almost everything for AEW is down. Now AEW is increasing volume. Okay, well, let's hedge caveat. AEW is now doing a lot more events in this January to June than last year, January to June. Overwhelmingly because of Collision, right? They did 3 Collision tapings last year in this period. They did 20 in this period this year. Okay, we'll get those caveats in. In terms of total attendance, Collision did 61,000 versus 19,000 last year because they did 20 events versus 3. Okay, but in terms of averages, of course, that average is much lower for Collision because the first because last year in those 3 events was driven by a really big attendance at the United Center for the first Collision. Okay, but let's talk about what's the consistent measure over the years in January to June is Dynamite. 26 events in all 3 of the last years. This year, 2023 and 2022, 26 events, and total attendance is down. Average attendance is down, according to WrestleTix estimates. Average Dynamite in January to June was 3,900. 3,900, down from 5,400 last year, down from 5,700 in 2022. So, is that due to volume? Is that due to cord cutting? I don't think it's due to cord cutting. But it could be due to volume somewhat. It could be due to lack of genuine interest in AEW in this year versus last year, which I would argue is largely related to lack of star power in those periods. Anyway, pay-per-views. We've gotten this period for AEW 4 pay-per-views, which averaged 10,500. So those pay-per-views still performing pretty strongly, although that is slightly down 5% from the prior year in terms of an average, when they averaged 11,000 in 3 pay-per-views in the prior year. We know this period includes Forbidden Door, yes, which was at the very end of June, and Revolution, and Money in the Bank, and Double or Nothing, and Dynasty, right? Those are the 4. Revolution and Forbidden Door, both $1 million gates. The other 2, just over 500,000, according to Pollstar data, off the top of my head, if my memory serves me. No house shows, mercifully. No house shows here for AEW in this period. They did last year. We don't have those on screen, though. Okay, WWE. Average house show is flat, despite, I believe, most of those market-to-market comparisons being positive. But house show average is flat. Total house show attendance is down because they ran only 35 January to June this year. Only 35 house shows. Mark Shapiro's coming in. He's cutting those house shows down. 35 versus 46 last year. They did 46 last year. They did 35 this year. So 11 fewer house shows. Similar average. Pay-per-views. Oh, I called them pay-per-views. I did. I didn't call them premium live events. I called them pay-per-views. They're still on pay-per-view, even if they're not primarily consumed on pay-per-view. I'm still calling them pay-per-views. Okay. Premium live events, if you prefer. They did 7 in this period this year versus 6 last year. The average is almost exactly the same. Between an average of 42,800 tickets distributed. I guess this includes the WrestleMania number. And we are using the WrestleTix estimate of WrestleMania, which is like 70,000, which I don't know how to reconcile in terms of the numbers that I got from the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission. I digress, though. The total is up 20%, but they did 1 more pay-per-view. Okay, the average is about the same. Okay. But that's only 7 events, 6 events. Okay, let's look at Raw and SmackDown. And are they doing... They are now doing... This is probably maybe not a first, but the difference is more stark than ever, I suppose, between... WWE is now doing... Let's see, in the 6-month period, is now doing 50... TV events, what I'll call TV events, Raw and SmackDown, versus just 35 house shows. further back you can go in time, the more the opposite is the case, I would assume, in terms of how shows used to be the thing that was greatly outweighing TV events. But here we are. Here we are in the TKO Mark Shapiro era, and we're probably going to less DNC markets and sticking to those big markets where you get big media revenue and you've got higher margin, no doubt here. Margin is code for profit. Okay. Our Raw and SmackDown up there in terms of average, in terms of total, we've got a similar number of events in these periods here. Raw is up 13%. SmackDown is up on average 17%. Raw averaged 10,900 according to WrestleTix estimates, up from 9,600. SmackDown averaged 11,800 in January to June, up from 10,100. So what can you say other than, is W's business leveling off? No, not according to these numbers. It's still, if anything, it's growing. If we're comparing the seasonality, of course, the WrestleMania time period would be higher sequentially. It might be slightly down. Let's take a look at these sequential numbers here. In fact, I mean, you could say the lead up to WrestleMania is Q2, and then you've got the beginning of, or the lead up to WrestleMania is Q1, and then you've got a little bit of WrestleMania time in Q2. And Q2 was up from Q1 for SmackDown. Oh, for Raw, it was slightly down. But nonetheless, you know, year over year, what was Q2? 10-3 versus Q2 last year, 9-4. That's Raw. Last year, SmackDown, 10-2. And this year, 12-4. Year over year, these are strong, positive deltas. Year over year differences. I would ignore these year-to-date numbers for Q3 at this point. So, is WWE's business cooling off? No. It's still growing. Consumer interest. I'm not just talking about revenues and business-to-business partnerships that are being more efficiently monetized through media rights fees and site fees and other things that wrestling fans have basically no influence over. No. Ticket sales. Purchases made by wrestling fans. Still up. Still up. TV ratings looking good, too, despite all the challenges that TV is encumbered by. All right. That's what I have to say about W business and AW business at this point. We will move on to the world of Japanese wrestling. I'm not the foremost expert in Japanese wrestling, but we're gonna put out some data here. And I did ask some friends who know Japanese wrestling better than I do and say, does this look reasonable? But let's see here. What are sort of look at what are the leading wrestling companies out of Japan at the moment? Of course, New Japan is the perennial forever leader, number one, even in the good old days of the 90s. As we put out sort of a historical look on WrestleNomics.com for subscribers last week, I believe, looking at you going back to 1993 and New Japan over all Japan throughout all of those years, in fact. So looking at the same period that we did for WNAW, January to June, and how's New Japan doing? Is it coming out of the pandemic still? Is it doing better? It's doing slightly better. Yeah, we're here with New Japan attendance, total attendance, similar number of events, 73 to 71. New Japan's total attendance is up by 6%, a little bit. Average attendance is up by 3%, edging towards 2,000. Now, let's talk about what this data is. It's announced attendance, so you may want to take this with a grain of salt. New Japan attendance is since the middle of 2015, we do believe, are pretty honest. We think they're pretty honest. I think they represent tickets distributed. So I think it includes comps and things like that. But since the middle of 2015, people who I trust, not people who work for wrestling companies, but people who I trust who follow Japanese wrestling business closely tell me that these are honest numbers going forward from that point. These other companies, they may vary. But this is the data that we have. And we can discuss and dispute what's what here. But number two, and now this is sorted in terms of total attendance. Dragon Gate, of course, as you may know, runs a lot of events, runs more events than any of the other companies we're looking at here. By the way, what companies are we going to be looking at here? We're going to be looking at New Japan. Dragon Gate's one word, Dragon Gate, okay? It's one word. That's what I've been told by the people who know Dragon Gate, by the Dragon Gate knowledgeable people. Dragon Gate is one word. Now, it's not two words, Dragon Gate, it's Dragon Gate. And then Stardom, Noah, All Japan Pro Wrestling, and DDT. Those are the six companies with the highest total attendance, according to themselves, in this six-month period, January to June. And we've got Dragon Gate's average and total is up 17% and 27%, respectively. Stardom, though, Uh-oh. Maybe is this the Rossi effect? Stardom is down. Stardom, last year, had a higher total attendance than Dragon Gate in January to June 2023. Not the case. Not the case. In 2024, Dragon Gate is back up to number two. Stardom's average is still slightly higher than Dragon Gate, but total attendance is not. And it's down 24% in terms of average attendance compared to last year. Noah is strongly down from the Muto period where they were running Tokyo Dome and things like that of last year. So I don't know. If we compare Noah to 2 years ago to get that, you know, this outlier here out of the way and just look at 2022 for Noah, 32,000 is the total attendance versus 21,000 in 2022. 705 is their average attendance, 705 versus 520 in 2022. Noah, which maybe is Noah, can we say now Noah is in a partnership with WWE? Why partner with Noah and not Dragon Gate? Well, Noah does have the higher attendance, and Noah certainly has stronger corporate backing in terms of Cyber Fight, Cyber Agent. Who knows what Dragon Gate's backing is. Okay. And does have that, I suppose, you know, the Cyber Fight network of promotions. Okay. Before I offend pro fans here with my lack of knowledge of Japanese wrestling. All Japan is up 17% in both average and total. Same number of events, 32. They're averaging 899. They have a higher average than Noah, 899, according to themselves, 899 fans per event. And DDT is also up by almost 50% over last year, where they had a weaker year last year, but they're averaging now 475 announced attendees. So there you go. Maybe this is more of a conversation starter than for me to something to actually expound upon, but there you go. We'll go into merchandise now. We'll go into talent analytics. All right. What is this? What are we looking at here? To remind you of my methodology. What I've done is I have a script. Yes, it's a Python script that wakes up every morning at 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern time, and it visits Fanatics Apparel WWE shop, and it says, give me all the best sellers listings. And it collects all the best sellers in order, assuming they're honest. If they're honest, this will make sense. If they're not honest, then this data is nonsense. But this matched up pretty well with WWE's own claims about who the top merchandise sellers were last year. Likewise, for Shop AEW, I do this for Pro Wrestling Tees. We're not going to look at Pro Wrestling Tees today. It's kind of redundant to AEW Shop in a lot of ways. In any case, that's what we do. We collect the order of bestsellers, assuming that they are in order, and assuming that the listings are honest in terms of who is actually selling units. Now, we don't have, this is not sales data. This is an estimate. If you don't call it an estimate, I'll get mad at you and I'll try to shame you on Twitter. But this is an estimate and this is not a reflection of actual sales, but we do a reverse rank and we, over the broad course of time, hope that we get an impression. This is as good as we've got. We get an impression that's systematic and mathematical to tell us who are the strongest sellers of merchandise. And this is apparel only when it comes to WWE shops. This doesn't include replica belts or masks, unfortunately, for Rey Mysterio. And number one, January to June, his items were in the top 10 in 331 instances throughout January to June is CM Punk already, despite having, what, one match? What, only appearing in in-ring competition one time year to date. And only one time over the course of the last 7 years for WWE. But he's, of course, appeared on TV a number of other times. CM Punk edging out Cody Rhodes in terms of reverse rank value. Cody Rhodes doing well as well. Followed by Jey Uso in his Yeet shirts, apparently. Roman Reigns, Stone Cold Steve Austin, the WWE brand itself, and various permutations thereof. Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton, The Rock, LA Knight. We're going to go into some more complicated talent analytics later that will include merchandise rankings. I really should have put a Patreon graphic on here, shouldn't I? And then we'll look at AEW, the AEW brand. Now, this is all AEW merchandise. They, on their shop, put all of their merchandise types in one category. They don't split things off into replica belts and mugs and things like that. It's all together in one category. And we have AEW And it's like DVDs and things. Okay. But we're concerned with talent, probably, right? Will Ospreay is number one year to date. Will Ospreay and his Bruv shirts, apparently, and other kinds of merchandise. Swerve Strickland, number two. You have the Ring of Honor brand, number four. Adam Copeland, Sting, Mercedes Moné, MJF, who only recently returned to TV after being off of TV for the entire year up to that point, if you want to caveat it. Prince Nana. Should we just combine Prince Nana and Swerve Strickland to one act? You decide. And finally, Tony Storm at number 10. Okay. Now what? Where are these slides going next? Aha. So, I've been doing some systematic and ultimately arbitrary math. So this is not like the one and obvious way to do this. You could cut this. You could slice this pie in a lot of different ways. But I've done some math, and I've made the text tiny. So hopefully this will dissuade stupidity and screenshots, and I'll try to explain what I've done here. In terms of trying to answer the question, who's a draw, or to phrase that more in a more sophisticated, polite manner, to try to understand which talent are having the most positive effect on economics, to our feeble public minds, where we don't live inside companies with the access to all the data that companies have access to, which would include things like minute-by-minute ratings, actual merchandise sales data, mainly those things. We don't have access to those things. We don't have minute-by-minute data. If I had a Nielsen subscription, maybe I would, but I don't. But we do have quarter-hour data, and we do have those merchandise rankings that I just went through, and we do have YouTube data, which I'm scraping hourly. The robots here at WrestleNomics headquarters are scraping hourly. So we can use that data to get an idea of which talent, which wrestlers or other types of talent are having a consistent, frequent, positive effect on various consumer metrics, including television viewership in the green here if you're watching video, YouTube viewing, which is in red here, and merchandise rankings in yellow. Now you might say, I don't know, why is YouTube? They don't get that much money from YouTube, and they don't. Wrestling companies don't do generate millions from YouTube, but it's a tiny, 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 tiny percentage of the money that they generate from television. But YouTube is such a cleaner data set. And in really pronounced cases where the noise is the most drowned out by the signal in terms of quarter hour analysis, it almost always matches up with the results that we see for the corresponding segments on YouTube. So YouTube may not be the source of a lot of money like TV is, but YouTube is such a cleaner data set because it's an isolated segment of TV that's highlighted for WWE and AEW. They put basically all of their major segments are highlighted in some form on their YouTube channels, and it's not affected by things like sharing the quarter hour with other content. It's not affected by ad breaks, which are the biggest anti-draw in all of wrestling. Nobody likes ads, despite John Cena voicing over many of them. Nobody likes ads. So we do have, if you work hard, and if the robots work hard enough here, we can collect enough data to get an impression. Now, we're not going to get something that I would say is capable of a strong conclusion if we're looking at an isolated amount of time. If you're one of these ridiculous people on social media that wants to focus on one data point and win one week of quarter hours and say that your favorite wrestler is a draw and the wrestler that you don't like is an anti-draw because you have to project your wrestling preferences onto the world, sorry, this is not for you. But if you want to look at 6 months of time, a big chunk of time where we can get a preponderance of data, a preponderance of cases to study the question of who's a draw, well, that might be more meaningful. And this is what I've done. So I've made some mathematical choices here, but I've applied it in a systematic way. So I debate into how much detail I should get into here because I fear I'm going to bore you, especially in audio. But And I wonder how much I'll be able to remember how I concocted all these data points. Basically, I took three different I tested quarter hours in three different ways that we're showing on the screen right now. And that is, tell me how often you had a positive effect on quarter hour ratings, which meant did you, were you in a quarter hour that did 5 percentage points better than that quarter hour normally does, is essentially the question that's being asked there. Or it's either that you did 5 percentage better than that quarter hour normally does, or you were the most watched quarter hour on the show. That's what total points means here in terms of quarter hours. That's the measure of success in a given quarter hour, in a given case. We measure that. And then we counted up all the times that you appeared in a key segment. A key segment is a live promo, in-ring promo, or a match. Okay. And to be totally transparent here, hopefully, and you know, I've tried to label hundreds and hundreds, probably a few thousand quarter hour descriptions that we write and Jason Umpresser writes for us in our quarter hour reports and YouTube video titles, which are put out by the companies themselves, which sometimes it might not even include the wrestler's name, but usually they do. So we're looking at the number of times that you appeared in one of those key segments, and we were sort of using that as what's listed here as a hit rate. So that's testing. Not only are you, the question here is not only did you score a lot of points, in quotes, not only did you show that you affect a quarter hour positively, but we're looking at the times that you were in a key segment where you could have affected a quarter hour positively because you were in a match or a live promo, which is of a long enough duration that we're going to seriously consider it. How often did you meet that arbitrary measure of success? So we've got three categories here called total points, called hit rate, and called points per appearance. So that helps. That does help. Somebody like Roman Reigns, who's not on TV as much, and Cody Rhodes is not on TV as much, because we're looking at his rate, you know, his hit rate and his points per appearance. Program appearances here means, were you on a program or not? If you were in 2 quarter hours, you don't count twice. You only count once. Okay. And if you were in a program where you weren't in what we call a key segment here, you don't count. That doesn't count for you. So that's what that means. Okay. similar for YouTube. So the YouTube measure of success is, like, if I can remember, it's did your number of views through 7 days, were you either the most watched video of your program in its week, or were you in the top, I think it's 25 percentile of your program? It might be in the trailing year or some trailing period of time. Okay. And that's how we determined these metrics for YouTube. And then we went to merchandise and said, what's your reverse rank value out of these ranking listings that we track? And then we have that as a category, as well as your reverse rank value per unique items. Because I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, oh, so-and-so is a good merchandise draw, but that's only because he has lots of shirts. What about so-and-so, who's actually my favorite wrestler, who doesn't have enough merchandise? So we're creating a metric here to try to take that into account. And in fact, if you want some actionable item here, I'll just say it now. If you want some actionable item, we could look at, I think I want to look at this slide, and we can say, hey, Will Ospreay probably does not have enough merchandise. His merchandise is really highly ranked, considering he's only got like 11 items. And maybe similar for the Mogul Embassy, which is not as stable anymore. Anyway, but okay, let's go back to this. All right, so that's what we've got. And if we take all this arbitrary math, my arbitrary decisions, and applying them systematically, we get, Who's according to this, the biggest draw for WWE? Sorry, it's Roman Reigns. Followed by CM Punk, followed by Cody Rhodes, followed by The Rock, followed by Seth Rollins. And you could do this math in a different way and come to different conclusions. But this is what I came to with my arbitrary system here that I created myself. And here's, look at this. Look how cool this is going to be. Look at this rate. You'll have to be watching a video to get this. Look at this radar chart. This is finally I got to make a radar chart. That's really what I was excited about, is I could finally make a radar chart. And this sort of shows you the merchandise areas in yellow, the quarter hours. So quarter hours counted more. Quarter hours counted in 3 categories versus YouTube, which counted in 2 categories versus merchandise, which counted in 2 categories. So I hope you see why I made that decision, because TV is the source of so much more money than merchandise, and certainly than YouTube. So you would conclude from this radar chart that Roman Reigns has had a lot of success on television, less so in terms of merchandise, and a lot of success as well in terms of being YouTube clips that people like to watch. Okay. Who else we got here? We got CM Punk. And he should move pretty smoothly here. Look at that. Oh, my God. Okay. CM Punk has got a really strong core hour hit rate. He's been really strong as a merchandise reverse rank value guy. Maybe he needs, I don't know, I've got him pretty low, though, when it comes to value per item because he has so many items. But he's been really strong in terms of being in YouTube clips that people like to watch. So that's why he's, by this analysis, the number two talent for economic interest, also known as who's a draw. And we're going to look at two more radar charts. Cody Rhodes, who's doing really well in one category in the total points because he's in a preponderance of quarter hours that have done really well. But he's in a lot of them, so they don't always meet the high bar of success and counting for this system. And his merchandise does pretty well as well. And his YouTube clips do really well. So he's number three here by this system. And then some guy named The Rock, who's not been on TV that much, but was on TV quite a bit earlier this year. And his core hours do really well in all three categories. Not as well as some others, but do really well in all three categories. Not so much in the merchandise. Somewhat in the merchandise, I'm sure, but not so much. And really well in at least one measure of the YouTube, the points per appearance, because he's not on TV as much, but his points per appearance is really strong. Okay. That's what it is. We won't go through all these. I think it'll get too boring for audio especially. But okay, so that's that. And now, sound the alarms. We're going to talk about AEW. Number one for AEW I have here under that same system. I've separated, yes, I separated out the WWE and the AEW people here. These numbers are under the same system. I wouldn't necessarily compare them because the platforms of WWE and AEW are of such different magnitude. Certainly the YouTube are, and the merchandise rankings based on the volume of items between the two might not be fair to compare. So that's why they are in separate tables. Okay, who's number one in these 6 months? And that's what this is, by the way, if I didn't make it clear. This is January to June of this year. Who's number one? By this system, Swerve Strickland, the champion. Number two, Will Ospreay. Number three, Jon Moxley. And where is MJF? MJF's not on here. And that may just be because just not enough samples here. He's only been back on TV in the last few weeks. So just probably not enough data that has been accumulated to this point for MJF in this year to date. As we get down into this table here, I think there's a looser meaning in terms of what these numbers mean. But we do have Hook, Samoa Joe, Kazuchika Okada, The Elite, Brian Danielson, Mobile Embassy, Adam Page, Darby Allin, Orange Cassidy, Daniel Garcia, for disclosure, not for bragging, who I had in training, The Acclaimed, Claudio Castagnoli, FTR, Willow Nightingale, Katsuyori Shibata, Chris Jericho, Tony Storm. Okay. Well, let's look at the Swerve Strickland, his quarter hours. He's in a preponderance of quarter hours that have done well. His merchandise has done pretty well here, and his YouTube is on the lower end. But we're gonna see values here that are further away from 100% compared to the W people because I did standardize them on the same scale. Maybe I shouldn't. Will Ospreay doing really well on merchandise and doing pretty well in terms of quarter hours as well. And Jon Moxley, despite hasn't exactly been in main events. In this year, but still his quarter hours apparently doing pretty well and his YouTube helping his rating out here enough as well. That's about all. I guess I put a slide in here. I want to touch on the TKO stock to date. TKO stock has done really well. It's up. If you invested $100 in TKO stock on January 1st, it is now worth $138. So the stock is up to $110.78 as of the close of the market on Friday. So that's above the indexes. It's above the Endeavor stock, and the TKO stock is doing quite well. I don't know. I guess that's about all I have for this week. As I've gone over an hour, I will mention as I scramble to pull out the Patreon here that if you'd like to get my TV ratings reports, quarter hour reports, that is all available for subscribers for just $5 a month. on Patreon, patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You get access to my TV ratings reports that come out nearly every day. You get access to this podcast every Sunday. I'm worried that we're having an issue with my screen share, but maybe not. Anyway, you get access to the TV ratings reports, the merchandise reports that come out every month. You get access to the slides for this podcast every month. This podcast is for subscribers every Sunday, except for the first Sunday of the month, like this one, which time it is free. And whatever else I happen to write and put on the Patreon, there are some articles that are free for everyone, or sometimes they're free and sometimes they're behind the paywall. But if you're a subscriber, you get access to everything at all times. And if you want access to our spreadsheets, you can become a data subscriber for $10 a month. You get access to my big spreadsheet of TV ratings, my big spreadsheet of quarter hour ratings, and my big spreadsheet of YouTube data as well. So that's all for now. And we'll be back on Wednesday with Pollock and Thurston. And I think we're going to talk some more about our experience at Money in the Bank. And until then, thanks to everybody, of course, for supporting and listening and subscribing. And I'll talk to you again soon. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.